Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I'm your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. I'm assuming many of you who are in the telecom world, just like me, did the annual pilgrimage last week, visiting Barcelona for Mobile World Congress. As many say, you don't attend Mobile World Congress, you survive it. I did survive it. So are my guests today. I have with me Neil Shah, founder and VP of research at Counterpoint Research. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is the first time with on Tantra and Mantra.
Indeed. And my good friend and fellow analyst, Leonard Lee from Next Curve. He's a regular on the show. Leonard, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Good to be on again, Prakash.
Cool. So, gentlemen, as I mentioned, we all survived Mobile World Congress, at least I hope so. Hopefully, you all reached home sound and safe, despite all the things that are happening in the world today. Let's start with the attendance. I thought it was a little bit light this year compared to last year, and that was also confirmed by the GSMA numbers. They said there were close to 105,000 attendees this year, which was down by almost 4%. Did you guys feel the same?
Not really. I thought it was pretty busy and packed all four days, actually. So I don't know. The attendance might have been lower, but maybe people stuck around a little bit longer.
Okay. Could be. Neil?
I think it was okay. Actually, we could have expected record numbers this time, with 5G and AI buzz all around, and now 6G coming in. So I think I did brush shoulders with a few. That confirms that the crowd was there. So while moving from halls to halls. So I think it was okay crowd. Good enough crowd. Obviously, okay. It would have been more.
And maybe I'm a downer, but I thought the Taxi Alliance and others were a little bit lower. But yeah, I mean, but did have full 3 days of meeting. So that the numbers were lower, in fact. Okay, so in terms, and also I thought, unlike previous years, there wasn't a big dominant theme this year. I think, a lot of topics and such across AI, 6G and others. One thing I think if there was any theme, it was more cautious, wherein, when people are talking about AI, yeah, they did talk a lot about it, but they're cautious and not overhyping it. And even 6G, there's a lot of talk and demos and so on. And also, although people are talking about 28 and 2030 timelines, but they're not as assertive or as bullish as they were in the 5G days. And there was talk of 5G advance that being implemented and so on. There's a lot of enthusiasm there too, but it's not as if that is the big thing going to happen in next couple of years and so on. So again, I'm a little bit downer there, but I would love to hear what you thought about themes and the enthusiasm behind those themes.
Neil, why don't you go ahead?
See, I'm like a kid in the candy store whenever I go to such events. So anything even is hyped or is showcased, I feel good about it if it's something new and something more meaningful. So I definitely saw the common theme across was agentic AI this year. Last year, it was just AI, and everyone was just thinking of how to position it. Everyone just had AI on the booth. But this time, it was more pronounced with agentic AI. That is a common thing, right from devices to networks to even small developers and operators. So I think agentic AI across networks, across devices, I think that was the common theme. And one theme which was common was satellite and NTN, which also I heard in almost all conversations.
Really? Yeah, I mean, I just saw AI all over the place. But under the hood, I think we're still in a very similar place as the industry was last year, where they're still grappling with some of the challenges with the technology in its various forms, whether it's the reasoning model or agentic or now the physical. And the reality is that, things like agentic frameworks, its use in network automation, its use in operational transformation, or if you want to call it agentic transformation of telco ops, these are all things that are still really, really tough. Whether you're an ISV or you're a telco that's working with SIs to make this stuff happen. And, you know, you really do see it in the numbers. You know, a lot of this investment in AI is not necessarily translating into demonstrable value or impact in the industry, right? And then obviously there's this whole topic of telco neocloud, or if you want to call it neocloud at the edge. That's an emerging topic, but I think there's a huge question marks about whether or not this even makes sense for operators. But, you know, obviously the sovereign topic took an interesting turn, especially with some of the stuff that happened in the Middle East as we were flying over to Barcelona. So we'll see how that impacts the whole sovereign AI conversation, but also the sovereign telco conversation. I think broadly, events that, sort of this conversation around sovereign is going to morph into something a lot more substantial and possibly disruptive to the mobile industry as well as the ecosystem as we knew it. So I think this is a really big year at MWC, and there's going to be a lot to think about, what, you know, even beyond just all the AI hype and the challenges that the industry is facing.
Yeah, sure. So moving beyond the hype. I mean, as Neil said and you said, AI is all over the place, right? So let's dissect that into a little bit. So let's start with the AI ops for operators, right? I mean, just like any other industry, operators for their own operations, you know, running their day-to-day network, their marketing, HR, and others, they have and are adopting AI. So an interesting stat from IBM, you know, their consulting business, which worked with the operators, they saw across many projects, mainly from marketing, HR, and other operations side, up to 25% improvement in efficiency. I think that's impressive, knowing that they're in very early stages. But that is kind of happening though, right? The the natural infusion of AI into the operations of the operators to improve efficiency, right? That's not hype. Did you guys see that as much?
Neil?
So yeah, no, that's a very good point, Prakash. As I said, like in the whatever conversations I had with ISVs, telcos, cloud players, agentic AI has been adopted at some level. So there are multiple areas within a telco space, right? Maybe it's customer care, product marketing, billing, like service delivery, network management. Yeah. So there are multiple areas where agentic AI is being adopted. The lowest hanging, which we have seen already adopted, is care, customer care. So it was run by bots in many operators, but now it is becoming more meaningful and efficient because now it is having access to the entire data lake, the entire telco data. Earlier it was very siloed, even the bots were very siloed. They were not talking to each other and so forth. But now these agents are talking to each other, and we are seeing a lot of benefits in terms of efficiencies. And also there's more acceptance. Some of the telcos were saying that it's more acceptance from customers to talk to bot rather than a human, actually, because bots are solving their problems faster and even giving resolutions. If they just sense the tone is erratic, a bot actually submits faster than humans.
Yeah.
So I think that is one area where I've seen. And I don't know if you guys had a chance to go at AWS for telco booth. So they had really good use cases over there on how these agents are helping operators gain money. One quick example I can give you is, there was a demo at from Tech Mahindra. You have to see that. So if you look at all the operators like Verizon, they write off almost $1 or $2 billion of debt every quarter, which is the which they are not able to collect. Right, money. So what now Tech Mahindra has done is they have built an entire agentic system. These agents will go and try to recover the debt from all of these users. And out of $1 billion normally, so what Verizon does, they sell it off to debt collectors, the actual collectors, for $100 million. Yeah. And whatever then there's upside is kept by this debt collectors. Normally, they maximum collect $100 million on an average.
Yeah, it sells, sold on the pennies on the dollar,
Exactly. But these agents, in first go, they collected $250 million. No human, only agents, by giving them different options, installment plans, and so forth. And now comes the beautiful part, is the business model. Like, how does Tech Mahindra charge for this platform, right? So right now, it is more outcome-based. So if they help collect $250 million, 50% is kept by Tech Mahindra, 50% is kept by operators.
Oh, I see. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's like, and you know, in HR, in managing their own operation sense and so on, there are tons of use cases, but good to see a real one that they are actually implementing. Yeah. Leonard?
I mentioned this as one of my key takes. I thought ML is making a lot of traction. The agentic stuff, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of ISVs and cloud service providers have barely rolled out proven agentic frameworks and tooling. I mean, these literally came out like 6 months ago, right? And so whether or not these things are battle hardened or let's call it enterprise grade or proven, it's way too early to tell. And you know, what we've seen through these hype cycles, especially for telco, is this constant churning through the excitement and then realization that these tools just, I mean, the stuff just doesn't do what, you know, as advertised, right? And a lot of the challenges relate to reliability, security, and confidentiality. And and so when you start to look at what's happening with agentic, especially with the advent of OpenClaude, the question of how do you control these things within the context of the network, your network operations or infrastructure operations or even your business operations, there's still big question marks. And it's difficult to find anyone who's really been able to apply these frameworks at an enterprise scale or even, let's call it a telco scale. So although there may be, some rare occasions where someone has done something tremendous, I didn't bump into any of that. Maybe I'm going to the wrong places, and anyone who does have a real proof point at scale, give me a call. I'm more than happy to kick the tires on your claims. But I think the one aspect of AI that did start show or serve as a bright spot was machine learning. And so when you look at our apps, when you look at what a lot of the perception AI related stuff happening with visibility, observability of the network or cell side environments and the condition of the network links, etc., etc. I think that actually silently has been proving itself in the midst of all this excitement about generative AI. So that's a bright spot. And, a lot of the reason why I think is because this whole Gen AI craze and the AI infrastructure craze has driven a lot of innovation and advancements in silicon, whether it's for AI PC or for, infrastructure. And that's... And then also the tooling, right? The libraries, the operational mechanisms for managing AI in its all its varieties, right?
Yeah,
I think those have really benefited ML.
Yeah, the two different kinds, right? The one that Neil was mentioning was more on the AI ops side, for example, customer service, and there are tons of other chatbots which are already there. You're applying AI ML to it to further improve what we're already doing, right? And the one you mentioned is more about the network management itself, not necessarily the other functions, say, you know, like autonomous networks was a big topic, you know, getting to this level four kind of automation, even looking at certification and other things. And then that's where basically you're talking about how you automate bringing on-site, site maintenance, improving the efficiency of network operations, not necessarily the other operations of the operators like marketing and others, but the network itself.
Yeah,
I think that is at very early stages, and that has huge scope for AI, agentic or otherwise.
Yeah. The other bright spot, though, for generative AI, I saw was in modernization. So using it to contextualize data or to, let's say, replatform or refactor code bases, right? So, you know, if you look at many of these telcos and their back offices and their you know, like their IT, OT portfolios, is a lot of legacy stuff. A lot of is typically a spaghetti mess of systems, right?
Indeed, yeah.
And so one of the things I thought was really cool this year with AWS, they leaned into that first. Instead of all these things about, you know, agentic automation and all this stuff, taking, you know, their transform product or platform, whatever you want to call it, and positioning it as a tool to help operators modernize their data as well as their back ends.
Yes.
And I think that's a valuable use case, you know, category, if you will. And it was cool to see at least somebody put that at the forefront. Do you know what I'm saying?
Data is a major challenge for AI across the industry. But I think specifically for operators who have been there for a very long time, unlike many of the other IT players, it is even a major problem. It is a mix and almost a mess of different kinds of systems, be it OSS, BSS, other operations and other things. So, and then making sense of all of data is a major challenge. Actually, wrote a report on it as well. So, yeah, I agree with that. Neil, your views on autonomous networks. Did you see anything interesting?
Yeah, if you look at autonomous networks, I think the operators which are actually deploying L4 capabilities are Chinese operators, right? That way ahead, you might agree, and you might also heard that, right?
Yeah, we were together at Huawei. I think they had tons of interesting stuff there during their presentations. Yeah.
So Huawei ZTE both demonstrated with their operator partners. Mm-hmm. Again, it was not a PowerPoint slide, but they are using L4. I'm saying that. I asked them, is L4 across the network or it is just picking up? He said, if you are deploying network slicing, right, it is a L4 thing because you can't have humans intervene to set policies and select. It is completely L4 or almost L5 grade network slicing. Mm. So whichever operator is using network slicing is completely L4. So there are pockets where we are seeing level 4 automation happening almost organically.
Mm.
But when you see most of the major operators globally, it's still level 2, 2.5 or 3 at this point.
Yeah. Right?
Because many of them are still just deploying 5G SA and so forth.
Correct.
Right, because 5G SA is
correct. And then some of them, other than the, you know, US and European ones and Chinese ones, they don't even have large footprint for 5G. Even in Europe, 5G footprint is very limited. Even in Barcelona, a lot of places I did not land on 5G network. It was just 4G.
Yeah, I saw E after so many years.
Correct. Actually. Yeah. Edge, right? Yeah.
Edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. In India, we are spoiled with low cost 5G. Yeah. And crazy. So.
Yeah. I mean, I was really surprised at some places on train. I saw Edge. And then, I mean, and sometimes in the web pages are so heavy, if you're trying to surf, it says no connection, and you can see it's Edge there, but you know, your browser doesn't see it as a connection. It's interesting.
Well, you know, that is an interesting observation, because when you think about MWC, there was such a huge focus on sort of the aspirational AI stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the operators in Europe and other markets outside of, let's say, China, India, South Korea,
yeah,
they have a lot of legacy baggage.
Right.
And if the industry's focus is not on modernization,
yeah,
you're never going to realize any of these advanced levels of autonomous networks and, you know, operations and any of these features, right? It becomes really, really difficult. And, you know, as you've recognized, Prakash, if you don't get, quote unquote, your data, whatever that means, in order and in a position to enable your advancement down these maturity curves, you're never going to go anywhere. It's not even a question of whether or not you're going to be behind. You're just not going to get any.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the problems with MWC, you know, whether it was metaverse hype or all these hype cycles that the and now physical AI,
yeah,
all of this attention to things that don't matter, you know, hold the industry back. And a lot of the legacy players or the players in mature markets, right, yep, that have all this legacy baggage. And so, you know, for me, it's frustrating to see how the industry generally doesn't have this ability to focus on what's important.
Yeah, indeed. So again, in the same realm, you know, we talked about AI for RAN or AI for telco, but also there is RAN for AI, right? I mean, using RAN as a infrastructure layer for AI inference and edge AI to some extent. I mean, I really loved how Samsung executive put in, I think all three of us were there, that I really loved, you know, cutting through all the hype and the hyperbole, if you will.
They're great.
Basically, they placed it right. I mean, it's very early stages. There's a lot of talk. Some things like AI ops is happening, but most other things, we are still at very infancy. And then, you know, you better be grounded rather than just keep you know, hyperboling it, I guess, right?
So yeah, customers are not ready.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And again, it's pushing these architectures, these hypothetical architectures and use case, building these hypothetical value cases for, you know, a model for the sake of, you know, supporting an AI RAN narrative. It makes no sense,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so this is where you see OEMs and, you know, ecosystem players really, they are starting to go, wow, I'm really tired of talking about this AI stuff when my customer has other problems, right?
Yeah.
And they don't see what the hype is suggesting or trying to promote.
A lot of times, you know, you don't get to hear about it in the Western press, but I think Chinese operators, at least based on what they were showing and explaining at the event, they are a little bit ahead on this curve than others. Neil?
I think, especially in China, we have seen it is mostly driven by the operators as well as the vendors, which are all state controlled, right? So they have enough budget from CapEx point of view, and they can try more different combinations and adopt different ways of automating their networks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen, as we talked about, China Mobile and others are reaching almost level 4
mm-hmm.
in some of the different applications. Not entire network is level 4, but there are a lot of elements within the network at level 4.
Yeah.
However, that becomes a very good story for these Chinese vendors, Huawei and ZTE,
mm-hmm.
to sell to other operators outside of China, right?
Indeed.
It's a good case study for them.
Yeah.
So, however, the scale of the operators outside of China is not the same as that of Chinese operators, right?
Of course,
so
yeah,
that is where these smaller operators, they want to adopt those technologies, but they are in conundrum whether to invest so much
mm-hmm.
To get advanced software subscription on the RAN
yeah.
for AI or for automation and so forth, right?
Yeah.
However, then it becomes more of a cash-intensive situation between, like, there are three operators maybe in Malaysia or three operators in Ghana, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are fighting, become the best one.
Yeah.
So they go ahead and adopt some of these features, and that becomes again a case. And then it becomes a flywheel effect. However, the biggest question is, okay,
the automation definitely helps them in terms of operational efficiencies, saving cost.
Yeah.
But the bigger question is when they basically invest in so much for the network, it also has to make them money.
Yeah.
Right. That was the biggest challenge right now. Operational efficiency is no longer a challenge. It is given. They will see the benefits.
Uh-huh.
But monetizing that is something which they are struggling with. And what are the different use cases? And we talk about killer use cases. Maybe in 5G era, because of this AI traffic, yeah. the token traffic increasing, social media uploads increasing, right?
Yeah.
So Uplink has become, you might have also seen that Uplink has become the big revenue monetization opportunity for operators everywhere. And that is what we heard mostly from the Chinese vendors, all the operators, that they're seeing huge surge in Uplink traffic. And that is a motivation for them to upgrade the networks.
Yeah, and also from 5G advanced perspective, I mean they are a little bit ahead, not little bit, I think far ahead in terms of monetizing and commercializing 5G advanced compared to say US or European operators, and some of the use cases that they say that work for them, like VIP kind of elevated experience and charging for it. That's kind of one of the main use cases that I heard from Huawei and some of the operators that they brought in. I don't know how much of that is applicable for monetizing 5G advanced in the US or Europe, where, and especially in US, and it's been tried a few times that doesn't seem to work. And Uplink, I 100% agree that Uplink is getting a lot more attention. We'll talk about how that's getting into 6G as well in a little bit. But I don't think the Western markets have found a way to monetizing either better uplink or better performance, right? Leonard, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, well, how do you monetize something that you can't sell? And you don't have those services, you don't have those capabilities. In many instances, you don't even have the operational capabilities full stack to deliver and monetize.
I think with standalone, operators do have those capabilities. But, but the issue is whether they can sell them like the operators in China.
Well, it could. But the thing is how many of the operators in Europe and the US have mature capabilities across the board, from the infrastructure all the way on up to the business models? There aren't that many. I mean, if there was an argument to be made, you could argue T-Mobile is in
exactly. Yeah, T-Mobile to some extent, Verizon, AT&T, but even those that they have the capability, I don't know. I mean, it's been tried a few times before. Unless there is a easy way to demonstrate it.
Yeah, but
all three operators are priding themselves on having the best 5G network. So, this elevated service is monetizable.
That's not what the Chinese do. What the Chinese do is they go full stack, not only from connectivity standpoint and communications, they go all the way up to these new novel applications, right? Whether it's for consumer or it's for business or enterprise. So they've always had a very different mindset when it comes to connectivity and more holistic thinking. Whereas I think the rest of the world has more of a fragmented mindset in terms of solutioning. You know, we still have, telco players just talk about connectivity, or, the endpoint device and how great the modem is. There isn't this holistic thinking around, well, what is that new application, that mobile application, right? And that is the difference. It's the way that the Chinese think about this stuff versus how the rest of the world thinks about this stuff.
It's not so much of new applications, but same service, but differentiated performance. So they give like VIP service and charge more. So moving on, in terms of this notion that Nvidia and now with Nokia pushing through, in terms of RAN for AI, telecom operators becoming infrastructure players in the edge Ryan space, putting like a GPU in every side, if you will, and becoming a AI provider. I think there were not too many takers, I guess, when I talked to a lot of folks. I don't know what you thought. I mean, it sounds interesting. Maybe it might work in some of the Asian markets like Korea and Japan, where there's tons of fiber and so on. There are some talk, but there's not a lot of interest, more skepticism on operators deploying GPUs on their base stations and becoming AI providers.
Yeah, I think adding GPUs to base station, I think obviously it's like a solution looking for a problem at this point.
Yeah.
If you can have a particular use case that you need that much of acceleration, you know, Qualcomm, then you have a lot of other players who are using FPGAs or accelerators for level one and level two, mostly level one traffic, right?
Yeah.
For acceleration. So the GPUs, will it do level one, level two, or it will be higher? That is not clear at this point to me. Maybe I'm not reading too much into the deal, or the details are scarce at this point. But what are the RAN workloads these guys are talking about? AI inferencing, Intel Core networks. Will the LLM run at the base station? Is that something what operators are thinking or architecting to? Or is 3GPP looking to do that in terms of standardized architecture? If that is the case, then it makes much more sense for NVIDIA GPUs, which are, again, power hungry. And power is a big issue at the base station, right?
Yeah.
In terms of cost.
Yeah, power so, and debate.
And how do you monetize it then?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm not completely convinced. Maybe next week at GTC, maybe NVIDIA can convince us exactly on what they're trying to do with Nokia, with some details. Once I get more information, I'll be more confident on this particular partnership with Nokia and NVIDIA at least.
Yeah. Leonard?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult sell. I've never been bought into this whole idea that putting GPUs at the cell site or in the baseband or the DU or even the CU makes any sense. It was sold as, hey, look, you know, when network traffic goes down in the evening, you can use the downtime on your GPUs to go and, you know, produce tokens. I think not recognizing that there's a tremendous OpEx piece that Neil just mentioned, which is the cost of electricity and power, right? And the question is, you know, when you have GPUs out there, which are subject to this very rapid technology advancement cycle, or at least claimed, right? Does it make sense? Is it profitable? And so it's really not a well thought out thesis that has a lot of holes that are being punched through. And you saw that at MWC, actually. And so this is why you see now increasing skepticism about the AI RAN concept, especially, based on GPUs. The edge is a brutal place. If you don't know that, not one of these mega cluster, huge AI data centers in the, it's not. It's completely different.
Yeah, we'll see. So that's kind of, puts it into this 6G thought process where it is supposed to be AI native. And then a lot of times when people hear AI, they are always connected to GPUs, right? But not necessarily the case. You can do AI without GPUs as well, a lot of AI.
Okay.
So 6G. I mean, it's still very conceptual. Everybody has their own opinions, and many showed some of the demos as well, which is interesting. I think demos still focused on improved air-link performance. Some of the use cases, like, for example, Qualcomm, I think, had a couple of interesting applications of 6G rather than just showing the performance in terms of sensors, using radio network for sensing, like for drones and as well as the things on the ground and so on. So that was interesting. What interesting things about 6G did you see and hear at the show?
It's difficult to say. I mean, these are things that we've heard for quite some time. I know that there was a lot of talk about integrated sensing and communications, which I think is It's cool. It's indicative of the changing nature of the network, which I wrote about a long time ago in the Ofcom study that we did, called it cyber-physical infrastructure. So going from communications to cyber-physical infrastructure, that's something that's going to happen as part of 5G advance. So regarding 6G, I think the real question whether or not, with all the talk about sovereignty, you can have a 6G, right? Parties outside of the telco industry or the mobile industry are going to quickly realize that, and Prakash, you know this very well, right? Mm. Everything under the 3GPP project came under, you know, together under a regime of globalization and globalism, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when you see all this fragmentation and talk of sovereignty, and that's not necessarily conducive to the dynamic that allowed us to arrive at the benefits of 5G. For me, that was really more of the revelation of all of the things that were happening around the 6G topic.
Yeah, interesting. And one consistent thing I heard, and I fully agree with this, is basically the era of making money, providing connectivity alone is gone, right? I mean, that's given and basic. If you want to show value in your company, in your business, you have to do more than simple data services or data connectivity services. So, and that's where the sensing and the other things come into play. Neil, what did you hear?
I think we went to the same booths for 6G. So,
yeah.
So I agree. Though the sensing use case is something what is more different than previous networks. And we are already seeing those right. Sensing happening at home with Wi-Fi 7, Wi-Fi 8. It's going to be a common feature, right, within the home. But sensing the entire network real time is going to be something which will unlock a lot of new use cases, but also there's a fear of surveillance, mass surveillance as well, right? That we'll have to see how that plays out. Apart from that, I think Ericsson showcased a couple of demos, if you guys saw with Apple on the multi-rad spectrum sharing, right? I think that that MRSS, I think that is something interesting because, 4G to 5G, we had this DSS and ESS.
Yeah.
Right. That was not a very efficient way of sharing spectrum between 4G to 5G transition. But what I've been hearing or what I understood from the demos was this is really revolutionary in terms of a smoother, seamless transition to share the spectrum with 6G, the 5G spectrum with 6G.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
I think that that was interesting to me in terms of.
Yeah.
What are different problems you saw from 4G to 5G migration and what you can solve with the new standard? I think that is something what excites me with this new transition. And again, AI native also they talk about is when they design all these autonomous networks. Right now, it's a patchy solution which is put on top of 5GA. It is not designed for 5GA, right? It was not designed for 5GA. So now if you want to deploy 5GA and if you deploy AI autonomous network, those are two discrete solutions. Again, one vendor's agentic solution or autonomous solution has to interoperate with the other vendors or the operator's own orchestration software, right? So that is not happening. If that can be natively designed within the standard, then it makes much more sense for deployment and interoperability. Right. So that is something I'm looking forward to if that can be solved in 6G.
Yeah. And also making the air interface itself very AI native, which means right now, there are standards in terms of coding, frame structure and everything. And it's pretty rigid right now.
Yeah.
And it's all defined in 3GPP. So and using AI to make it very flexible so that you get kind of the air interface that is specific and very highly optimized for the exact use case that you're doing, that makes it more efficient. So making it AI native kind of makes it very flexible and it has wide scope as well, right? I think, and then the industry is still trying to grapple what AI native means to a radio standard itself. And also, I think there is realization setting that continuing the path of the previous G is that, you know, put another air interface and try to do the same thing may not yield the same results as it did with 4G or 5G. I think that realization is setting in.
Yeah.
I know that's what I at least saw and heard from some people. And uplink that you mentioned is one of the key focus areas where I think there is still and a need for performance improvement, right?
So Prakash, we have an internal joke. I'm just sharing right now. So I know whether it chimes with you guys' observations. So, you know, every, even G has been popular. So 2G, 4G, 6G, but 1G, 3G, 5G have been all sort of failures.
Indeed. And then also usually what that are proposed for 1G actually get realized in the next G.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see what that happens. But I think suffice to say, 6G is still a collection of thoughts and few, you know, demonstrations of air interface and a lot of talk about collaboration. Qualcomm, Ericsson had some collaboration that they announced right before the show on developing 6G air interface and so on. So, yeah, a lot of things happening, but it's still... very, very early stages. And then I think people are still worried, especially operators still worried about monetizing their 5G investments and making sure 5G advance and gives them some benefits in terms of monetization before thinking too much about 6G. And another interesting thing about data centers. I mean, I don't know whether you guys were there. Deutsche Telekom and T-Mobile had this interesting presentation. And one of the things they talked about was how DT basically has deployed a data center for enterprises, not just for operators of their own use. And they were touting the success of it, saying, you know, it was basically 30% of the capacity was booked before it was even launched. And I talked to some of their executives, and they're saying basically the sovereignty that Leonard, you mentioned, is going to be a huge deal going forward, especially with the things happening around the world. And nobody better than the operators in the country is positioned to basically the sovereign data center providers to these specific regions or the countries, and they see opportunity there. I mean, I think it's a very, very difficult subject to handle. And also, because operators are from that local region or the country, means they are the only who can provide sovereignty to the data. I think that is still a big question. I mean, you know, hyperscalers could come in and say, you know, we promise to, you know, not just promise, but we comply with keeping data all local to the region or the country and then provide services and so on. I don't know whether you guys saw any such things or checked out what Deutsche Telekom was talking and saying. Leonard, you started the topic.
The topic of sovereign as it relates to sovereign neocloud is a tricky one.
Yeah.
I think everyone thinks of it still in terms of data.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to models, we're talking about something entirely different. And so technically, how you institute sovereignty, right, is very, very different than what we've traditionally seen with data residency in previous sovereignty efforts, right?
Yeah.
And implementations. And I don't know whether or not the, you know, building out these massive data centers is necessarily addressing the sovereignty issue, especially when you have certain global entities that have models that are harvesting data from your populace or your citizenry.
It's public data, right? So,
Well, yeah, but there's also privacy regulations that differ across borders. So there's a lot of things that get packed into sovereignty, and how you actually institute that as it relates to AI is going to be related to like the DMA and EU. I think the EU in this regard is very much way ahead of everyone else because they've been concerned about data and AI sovereignty and safety for the region, right?
Yeah.
And so we'll see whether or not, you know, building out your own data, you know, neocloud data centers and is really the way to go in addressing sovereignty. It's becoming an increasingly complex topic, especially given, you know, you're wrapping in defense and
national security. I mean, I think that it's just not just one question, right? Many questions, at least the first two are, what is sovereignty really mean? It's data, models, the operating entities, and so on, right? And second, our operators are the right place for countries to exercise that sovereignty, right? So I think both are still open questions right now. Neil?
No, I think you guys hit it on the head. I think, first of all, the definition of sovereignty is all over the place. What constitutes sovereignty? As you said, whether it's data, ideally it should be data, the public data, which should not leave the shores, one. Because data is a new oil and whatever yada yada terms we have and can misuse and so forth, right? Second, many of the governments are having data protection policies. Europe started with GDPR and all the other extended policies. Every nation and economy still is grappling the thoughts on what AI can do with the data, right? So first of all, the policymakers are not at all clear on what AI can do. Maybe hyperscalers and the model players exactly know what they want to do with the data and train the models. So if there's a data in South Korea and if someone in US or somewhere else is training the data on the local consumers, will South Korea government allow that to train the models outside of Korea, first of all?
Yeah.
Right. So then it opens up the entire sovereignty piece, which we have seen a lot in Middle East, right? They don't allow cloud players to be there. They have to have on-prem, everything on-prem, right? So I think that is the, I would say, the foundation of sovereignty, where all the data sits with the public government. And that is where, you know, over the last couple of years, NVIDIA and AMD have been cracking deals with these governments to build data centers for the government, right? And I think that is where it makes much more sense. With the telcos, maybe, yes, it could make sense if a telco is a state-run telco, right? And if telco is seen as more trusted than the government with the data.
Yeah. Or the government trusts the telco than other, you know, private entities, right?
Hyperscalers.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if we solve all these permutation combinations, we'll come to every country will have their own policy, their own sovereignty definition and allowances, right? If because many of these big players, they lobby a lot at government level to have their data centers in, right? And some have also gone in and provide sandboxed data centers, white labeled as sovereign data centers already. Many of these hyperscalers, right?
Yeah.
So they are also trying to play the game and get some revenue out of the managed services.
Yeah.
If they cannot build the on-prem data centers, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe they would build on their own.
Yeah.
So I think that is the one thing. And to the telco's point of view, I think you guys visited the Deutsche Telekom. I visited the SK Telekom. I was in a round table with their chief data center guy. So they already have built like 6 or 7 data centers, which is for the local app developers, because SK Group is a huge group, right? It's a telco, but they also have memory.
Correct.
SK Hynix, right? So
Koreans, the typical stereotype, all of them are huge conglomerates across many industries, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So they have their insurance company. They have all of these, their fingers into different government, public sector infrastructure as well.
Yeah.
So it maybe makes much more sense for them to lead the country with number of data centers, out of which some will be sovereign and some they have partnered with AWS as well for the developers, local developers who don't care about sovereignty, but they just want to run applications or models And then there's a revenue share between SK Telecom data centers, SK data centers and AWS in terms of GPU as a service model.
I see.
Right. So what they're trying to do is, if you're a conglomerate, you can not only use it for sovereignty for telco, their own telco, but also use as a GPU as a service model and be a token player, which you guys were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically DT did just in Germany, and they're still experimenting. And then if things work out, they might do it in other places as well where they have presence. So I think it's an interesting idea that when operators are looking beyond providing simple wireless connectivity, you know, looking at other areas where they can leverage their expertise, competence, and differentiation compared to hyperscalers who are largely US-based. And, a lot of people want to have something of their own, for example, in Europe. So that's an interesting area to look forward to on how things develop, especially with all the things going on with geopolitics and so on. So, yeah, I think we talk quite a lot. Just to top it up, any final thoughts, Leonard? Say the question is, did Mobile World Congress move the needle meaningfully for operators? Let's close with that.
Under the surface, yes. I think there was a practical current of conversation around modernization. On the surface, no. I think more distractions reminiscent of the metaverse hype cycle that passed through the halls of MWC. And I don't think physical AI really helped, as long as you recognize that the network is the telco's physical AI, which is my new saying coming out of MWC 2026. So, yeah.
Cool. All right, Neil?
I think under the hood, to Leonard's point, yes. But also some operators have successfully deployed some of these leading technologies, whether it's AI, autonomous network, or AI RAN. And they're seeing benefits, and they're becoming more of a benchmark for the industry. And vendors can use them as a case study for other operators which are lagging behind, right? But every operator has a different problem. And different form of revenue generation, different form of capex and opex capabilities, right? So it might not work for everyone, but at least someone is leading and showcasing that. I think that is the whole purpose of MWC. It's not that if there's a technology, everyone has to adopt it and everyone has to show the benefits right at that point at MWC, right? It's more of a forward-looking technology show. Out of 10 technologies, maybe 3 will work really well, 7 might not, but that's okay.
Okay, so that's a great point to conclude the show. So that was a great discussion. Thank you very much for coming to Tantra's Mantra, Leonard and Neil.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so folks, that's all we have for now. Hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you are listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another interesting tech subject. Bye-bye for now.